listening to Right On Radio on KFAI 90.3 FM and streaming live on the web at kfai.org. I'm Molly Ray. On tonight's program, Liz Olds chats with Paul Metza about his collection of poetry, prose, stories, and songs titled Alphabet Jazz. Metza describes it as a personal diary of sorts, midnight blasts of inspiration, love letters and poem, personal tributes to musicians and friends who have passed on, true stories, letters to the editor and friends, and songs I have written along that I still perform.
Then, in the last part of the hour, Molly Ray talks with Samuel Robertson about his work, The Illustrated Old Testament, from 1111 Press. Printed locally in Minneapolis, this 12x9 hardcover work contains 520 pages, 257 illustrations, and a dust jacket with some surprises. All of this and more, so stay tuned to Right On Radio.
Paul, are you there?
Yes, I am. Can you, do I get a login, a password here?
No, we're good. We're good. We got you on the air. Can't see you, but we got you on the air.
Okay.
We are talking tonight with multi-talented, can I call you a troubadour, a Minnesota troubadour?
I'm a troubadour. Front door in the back, troubadour.
Paul Metza, author of Alphabet Jazz, among many, many, many other things. Welcome to Right On Radio, Paul.
Thank you very much for having me.
Say, why don't we start out with a reading from the book, and then we'll get into talking about it.
All righty, let me grab my book here. How about the poem that opens the book, Memo from Rego Park?
That sounds great.
Here we go. A dog whistle wind night, paint spray on disappearing street, arpeggio vapor trail and a beach blonde discount. Trini Lopez and family too. Two or three chord Monty Hall behind doors numbered 2 and 3. Give the Chevy Nova to someone who cares or needs it. With Civil War alibis, cattle car algebra, lone street song, homeless Albert on a borrowed harp, baby blue Cadillacs and matching lingerie, lonesome chorus, hallelujah bunk bed, goodnight poems, ivory trinket lullaby, last trick ponies for wee small children on subways of the damned, blue light echoes, static volume curtain calls, may east or west, and someone named Frenchie when you least need him. Forgive but don't forget, apply but don't return, for they've all taken all your numbers away. Gave you a Spanish alphabet, nicknames and a joke book, babysitter's West Coast dream. Cast iron ukuleles, semi-permanent straw hat, tin star promise, and someone else's name in the witness protection program of your choice. Bye, you need more, what else is new? Straight circle overcoat, bad mustache, no bungalow for Romeo, flophouse magazines, lemon tongue promise, a missed kiss or two, car keys and a razor blade. Hoping we'd have more to show for this, raise your hand in a moment of silence, but don't cease to dream, for they can't steal that in our irregular moments of grace.
That was a poem from Alphabet Jazz, poetry, prose, stories, and songs by Paul Metza. What was the name of that poem again?
A Memo from Rego Park.
Okay.
Wrote that one. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to ask you, you wrote a straight up memoir about 10 years ago, Blue Guitar Highway.
That's correct.
And I'm wondering what prompted you to write this particular book, which is kind of a memoir in story and poetry and song. What prompted you to write this book?
My first book, Blue Guitar Highway, came out in 2011. That was a pretty much strict autobiography. Everything told from my point of view. Of course, it had a bunch of, you know, great friends, cool people, family and foe. And this was now, and that actually is coming out again in paperback on the spring of 2023 by the University of Minnesota Press. They're also publishing a book I wrote, I did most of the interviews for, and I co-wrote it with a guy named Rick Shevchik, called Blood in the Tracks, the Minnesota Missions Musicians Behind Dylan's Masterpiece. That's also coming out. But the book we're talking about, Alphabet Jazz, it was just a bunch of stuff I had sitting around, Liz, and I was getting ready to move out of Minneapolis in about 2 years ago. And I just kept going through drawers, which I had to go through anyway, and I had enough stuff. I go, I think there's a nice collection of writings here in a variety of styles. Like the title says, Alphabet Jazz Poetry, Prose, Stories, and Songs.
Let's talk a little bit just to get people who perhaps don't know you, although I can't imagine somebody doesn't know you, but just in case they do, why don't you tell us a little bit about your past, when you started playing music, when you started performing, and when you started writing your own stuff?
Short story. Went to see an Elvis Presley movie when I was in third grade. Saw this handsome guy with this great voice, drove great cars, played cool guitars, had a bunch of cool girlfriends, and won all the fights. I go, that's what I want to do for a living. So that's kind of where it all started. Then I got a guitar and I started playing, and I wrote my first song a few years later when I was in fifth grade, called How Many Times Must I Cry? And I wrote it with a friend of mine, Chuck Christensen. We had a little folk duo called Paul and Christian, and we thought we were the Iron Range's answer to Simon and Garfunkel. And so that's really when I wrote my first song. I played all through junior high and high school. My bands were The Positive Reaction, grade school rock band, Damn Everything But the Circus, high school rock band, then Hot Walleye, which became Cats Under the Stars in 1975. So I've been writing songs all along the way, but I've also done a lot of prose, and I don't necessarily journal, but I just write stuff down as it comes to me. You know, might be in a bar or a coffee shop and write it on a napkin or air sickness bag if I'm flying. So anyway, they just, all this stuff adds up over time. And so I decided this stuff, to put it all together, just kind of a fun collection. It was a great way to remember some very good friends of mine who passed away as well.
Yeah, there's some lovely tributes. I'm thinking in particular, well, Bill Hinckley, of course, and Willie Murphy, but I'm also thinking particularly of Sue McLean. We worked closely with her over at KFAI as well. Would you share a little bit about her?
She was a really powerful woman, probably one of the most powerful independent female music promoters in the country. She started in about 1973 or four. She booked her very first gig. She booked the Suicide Commandos for a high school prom. Found out she really enjoyed that part of the music business. So she just went on. She ended up moving from St. Cloud, where she booked some stuff at, I believe, St. Cloud State, and then moved down to Minneapolis and got involved with some of the booking agencies down here, and booked all kinds of music. Ended up booking shows for the Walker Art Center that she put in the Guthrie Theater. And when I saw Leo Kottke there in 72, I walked out of there after a concert, said, that's what I want to do for a living. Reconfirming what I said in third grade at the Elvis movie. My only goal was to play Guthrie Theater. And so when I moved to Minneapolis, Sue was booking it, and I got to know her. She ended up booking me there 8 times. And like I say in that chapter on Sue, she did more for my career, really, than anybody. But she was a really delightful, brilliant human. And her staff is all female. And she's a real beacon of light for female empowerment. And she had beautiful taste in music and had an incredible sense of humor.
In addition to Sue, who are some of the other guiding lights of the music business here in the Twin Cities and also in Minnesota that you have enjoyed the chance to play with?
Well, I've been fortunate. I played with just about everybody who I used to dream about playing with when I moved to Minneapolis in 78, people like Willie Murphy and John Kerner, although I've seen more shows than I've actually sat in with him. Bill Hinckley, Judy Larson, Willie Murphy, you know, and then there's Southside Minneapolis, you know, Ipso Facto and Kurt Obita and all the newer blues cats and electric blues and acoustic blues. So I just start thinking about it all night and I get lost about what we were actually talking about. But so I write about in my book, Alphabet Jazz, I write about Willie Walker, who's a dear, dear friend of mine. We played together weekly for 10 years and he passed away, 3 years ago now. And so I have a nice chapter about my relationship with him and the music we made and the time we spent together. I mean, it was much about just enjoying him as a human being as it was playing with him, although playing with him was a great honor. And then, of course, as you say, Willie Murphy, he kind of kicks off the book with a little piece I wrote called Honey from the Bee, which was an obit I wrote for Min Post when Willie died. And then I've got people like Jeannie Peterson, the matriarch of the incredible Peterson family, played up until her 90th birthday, which I saw at the Old Log Theater. And a little story about the night Spider John Kern and I spent with Guy Clark and Townes Van Zandt till wee hours of the morning at the Radisson Hotel. So there's hijinks, some fun stuff, hanging out in bars. Family, a lot of dog stuff in there. Did you get a chance to read the dog stuff, Liz?
Oh, yeah. I was going to ask you about Blackie. If you want to share some about him, that would be great.
Well, Blackie was my first rescue. And we lived, we had 16 great years together. And it was a very cosmic relationship. So I have a piece in there. From the day I met him until the day we had to put him down, I tell the whole 16-year story, and it's called A Dog and His Man, Blackie and Paul. Mm-hmm. And then I also, and he wrote about a 6-page story in there from his canine point of view. And I had no idea when I adopted him that he was that talented. Oddly enough, the rescue that I had after Blackie, may Blackie rest in peace, it's a dog named Blue, a rescue from Alabama. And so I wrote a story towards the end of the book called What a Difference a Dog Makes. And then Blue actually wrote a poem. Would you like to hear that?
I'd love to hear that.
And once again, I had no idea he was that talented. And if we can, let's see, find the right page.
We're speaking with Paul Metza, author of, well-known and very talented musician from Minnesota. He's reading from his book, Alphabet Jazz, a collection of stories and poems and songs and tributes and many other things, and we're going to hear a poem now about
You know what,
it's written by Blue.
Okay, I'm gonna go grab it. Long story, it's not in this copy. Let me get it.
We're he's getting a book so that we can hear this poem, a lovely poem about dogs. Paul is very into rescue animals. And when he gets back, he might want to get a pen and a piece of paper, because I'm going to ask him about the rescue organizations that he is familiar with. You might be interested in that. Yeah. If you're into rescues. Paul, are you back?
I sure am, Liz. And here we go. Now, Blue just, when I was finishing the book, he just laid there. I woke up one morning and I found a piece of crumpled paper and I opened it up. Because Blue, he's very talented, but he doesn't have very good handwriting. So it took me a while to figure what he was writing about. But after doing a little research, I found out, you know, he was left on the side of a highway in Alabama. His name was Highway when I adopted him. But anyway, so every person he references here is a fellow Alabamian. And since he named it after himself, it's called Blue. I was left on a highway in Alabama, just four paws and me, on a highway ridden by those blind like Helen Keller and those who wrote like Harper Lee, those who ran like Jesse Owens and like Rosa Parks, who sat so silently, like Zelda, who married F. Scott Fitzgerald, and Sun Ra, louder than cannons on Tripoli. I'm both soft and loud like that. Took but one day for you to see. Hearts collide and melt like that, as one, that man-dog Jubilee. That God, he is a funny God, the universe from A to Z. Who is to ask, who really knows, matters not to you or me.
I'm called Blue?
Yeah, written about, by Blue. It's got a future.
Written by Blue.
And it's called Blue.
Could you mention the names of some of the rescue organizations that you've worked with? I noticed you put that in the book.
Yes, there is a great one that I recommend, where I got, and I think if I can't pull it right off the beginning here, you can track it down if you Google it. Oh, here we go. I got Blackie from a no-kill shelter up in Mackinac, Minnesota, northern Minnesota, called Contented Critters. Their website is www.contentedcrittersmn.org. And tell them Blackie sent you. And it's the holidays, so send them some money for treats for the animals. And then the other one is where Blue came from. That's called Heart of Alabama Save, Rescue, Adopt. And that's just www.hasradog.org. www.hasradog.org.
And great, thank you.
Thank you for considering doing that, kind people.
Thank you for that information. So back to some music stuff. I'm wondering, do you consider yourself blues, folk, rock, or kind of an amalgam of all three?
I'm just, you know, I play a little bit of all of it. A lot of people think I'm a blues cat, but I don't consider myself a blues cat, although it's one of the bedrock foundations of the music I play. I'm just really just an American musician, I think. Simply.
And where are some of the places that you've played that you really have enjoyed, say in the Twin Cities or up in Duluth?
Well, let's talk the Twin Cities, right by KFAI. I did 4 years of Tuesdays at the 400 Bar with Cats and the Stars. Mm-hmm. And I moved up to the Paul Metza, started out the Paul Metza Trio and then Paul Metza Group at the Five Corners. And we were there for 237 consecutive Tuesdays. Of course, now when I first moved to town, I also had the pleasure of playing the Cafe Extemp and the New Riverside Cafe. And the Cats on the Stars actually did a gig I remember we had a singing saw that we played at KFAI when they were back in the Walker Church back in the late 70s. So really just in that little triangle, so to speak, because the Triangle Bar was right across that little alley. A lot of places there. Duluth, my very first show was one of my most memorable. I put up my record, Paper Tigers, in 1984, my first album of all my own stuff. And I opened up for Taj Mahal at the North Shore Theater in Duluth, which is now reopened and rehabbed, and it's just gorgeous. So I did about a half hour opening for Taj. Taj plays about 2 hours and 15 minutes. Dave Ray was playing next door at a coffee shop. So Taj and I would go next door to see Dave. Taj sits in with him for about an hour. Then we go up to a party, and two great musicians and good people, John Ward and Lori Hatton, and had a jam at their house till about, I left at 3:30. Taj was still playing. And 1984, he had a button on that said 40 and feeling sexy. And so finally at 3:30, I said, Taj, you win. You're the king. I got to go sleep. But anyway, so that's, but I've had, you know, I've been lucky to have a lot of great gigs in a lot of great cities, a lot of great places, and a lot of nightmare gigs. And a lot of those are in, yeah, book Blue Guitar Highway. There's a couple in Alphabet Jazz as well. You got to keep it real.
Yeah, yeah.
Can I ask you, Liz? Liz, let me ask you. Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Now, what did you like about the book? Because you're one of the first people that have read it.
I really liked, well, I especially loved the tributes. I knew some of those people, and it did my heart good. And I liked the whole book. I liked the way you put it together. I liked all the, you know, after having read your autobiography, this was kind of a different kind of a memoir.
Yeah.
That was really wonderful. I want to get back to you, actually, because we've only got about 3 minutes left. Why don't you tell us what you're doing next? Well, you did the book about Bob Dylan, but why don't you go into that again?
Well, this is what I'm doing. I had a foot injury about a month ago, so I'm kind of laid up until the first of the year. I was going to do a couple of book release parties up here and one at the Hook and Ladder with our friend Jackson Buck, but I had to cancel those until I heal up. I mean, I'm in good shape, but it's just I got to take some time for this thing to heal. So then I'm just trying to sell my book online. You can get it at Amazon.com, and looking forward to taking this on the road and actually do a show called Alphabet Jazz, so I can grab my guitar, play my music, and read my poetry, my prose, and tell my stories, play my songs.
That's wonderful, Paul.
2023.
That's wonderful, Paul. We have been talking to Paul Metza, Minnesota troubadour extraordinaire, about his book, Alphabet Jazz, a collection of stories, songs, poems, a little bit of everything. Paul, thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, and if you get the book, there's a QR code. You can get 14 free songs. And I'm just going to be putting a CD probably down at the Electric Fetus. So I've had an actual CD companion. So people don't want the book, just want the CD. They've got that option. But I think that they like both.
Great. Thanks so much for joining us, Paul. I got to let you go now, but it's been wonderful talking to you. The name of the book is Alphabet Jazz.
Thanks, Liz. Have a beautiful rest of the 2022.
You too. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And now this. Okay.
Okay, hi, this is Molly Ray with Write on Radio on KFAI. I am here today with Samuel Robertson to discuss his new book, The Old Testament, King James Version, that he illustrated. How are you doing, Sam?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on Write on. I listen to KFAI like every week. I just got to get that out of the way. I'm a big fan. So, yeah, I'm doing good.
Cool. Yeah, we're really excited to have you. I guess I can just start off right away and ask, are you from Minneapolis then?
I'm not from here. I grew up in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, but I've been here since 2006. Yeah.
Did anything, obviously, it doesn't have to, but did your upbringing and kind of where you're from influence your relationship with kind of the topics of this? Obviously, this is a Bible and you filled it with art to an extent. Has that been affected by kind of growing up in the Midwest?
Yeah, well, I was affected on some level, not like too immediately or anything, but I did go to Catholic school up through sixth grade and then like went to church and stuff up until like 15 or something. But I never like, it was always a chore, you know. I never was that invested in the situation, but so it was like kind of dormant in the back of my mind, just religion and church and stuff, but it was never it seems so distant that it wasn't an influence of the project on any like immediate level, subconsciously maybe. But
I grew up in the Midwest too. It's just, you know, for ever present kind of stuff. Can you give us your description of this book and project? There's a lot of facets to it, it seems. So it's nice to hear directly from you what your goal was and process.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I can try. I feel like maybe somebody else could do it better than me. If anybody wants to try to like review it or tell me what you feel like, I would love to hear your thoughts. But it's just, I wanted to illustrate a book and stumbled on the Old Testament as like something I'd want to try. And it just made sense intuitively that this is the one I want to do like as soon as I landed on it. But the book itself, it's a big hardcover book, almost 260 paintings in it. And it's paired with the entire text of the King James Old Testament. And that text was the one I wanted because like the kind of archaic ancient language. I felt like it would pair with my style in a way that I didn't even understand how it would, but it turned out to work like how I needed it to. But then, yeah, like I selected for each of these paintings, I selected a passage to base it on, or like I selected the passage and then made the painting. But then the style of the paintings themselves, they're like kind of cartoonish, but it's like more nuanced than that. It's not just like it's not a cartoon. But the common thread through it all is like, I think humor for the most part, but I'm not making fun of the Bible with it, but that's just like the language that I have used for my art. So, 'cause it just kind of feels universal or something that everyone can kind of relate to. It's like it's a modern take on the ancient words. And people have said it's kind of like surreal or psychedelic, but I mean, maybe, I don't know.
I definitely like, it's really bright and colorful, but it's definitely not like comic-y. It's definitely like fine art from my opinion, but it's like, it's your style, which is super unique. I want to share that. So Sam's Old Testament is 520 pages with 257 illustrations. I think that's what I read. And then there are surprise elements to the physical book. Like, it's a large book. And then I understand that it took you many years to put this together and that certain parts of it have been seen publicly already, or at least the art of it. And then, so this is like the year that it was finally done, but there's been kind of a variegated process to it.
Definitely.
So you said you're painting them, and so so all the illustrations, is the medium paint? And what kind of paint is it?
Yeah, there it's all house paint, so like latex paint. And I used to use that just because it was like affordable and free and stuff. And then, but I really love how it works. So it just is something that I always have gravitated to. And then in this project, it's just like very free and you can kind of do whatever you want with it. You can paint over things that don't work. So you can like work really loosely. And then to answer your question before that, yeah, it was like a 7-year project. And then I've had 4 exhibitions throughout it where I've showed the paintings to an audience at a gallery, once at, in the Heart of the Beast Theater. And for that one, I had like the whole main auditorium area of it. So I got to like, I built out this huge 8-foot by 8-foot cube to display art on the inside and outside, as well as like on the walls around it. So that was kind of like a fun one. And I've spoken at some churches, 2 of them, and a college. And I did a book tour. So yeah, it has been seen, has some exposure, but
yeah. And that's, and then, so how did you know when you were done? This is a top question.
Yeah. With the book?
Yeah.
Well, I did it kind of chronologically. So I just did a book at a time. And when I finished the painting for Malachi, the last book of the Old Testament, then I was done. It was the last one.
Wow.
But they're a kind of selected painting or passages that were roughly 3 pages apart. Mm-hmm. Because the way that I made the book, it's like a page of text and an illustration alternating. So like 3 pages of the actual Bible that I was working from, like picking the passages from, equals like 1 big page of the 12x9. So that's kind of how I selected the number of paintings that I had to do.
Yeah, cool. So the phrases you illustrated, it from the King James version of the Bible, it brought forth, it's kind of like modern, twisted, chaotic. And I have a passion for like dystopian writing and art. So I, of course, associate it to dystopia. How did you pick which phrases? Did they, like, you just waited for ones to pop out to you? But like, how did you describe, would you describe your process of taking inspiration and finding these visuals from passages?
Yeah, I think it was kind of dystopian, like the imagery that I wanted to portray, or the passages that I was choosing, because there's a lot of gloom and doom in it. And like those ones would resonate with me. So there's just ones that I would, that seemed like really fun ones to illustrate. Like I knew that I would have good luck with it if I was gonna paint them. So yeah.
Okay. I really liked the depictions of food that I found in some of the images. Like there was especially like hamburgers, pizza, and like to-go food. Will you tell me about these like relationships to food in the art?
Sure. Yeah. There's like, as like I said, there's like a lot of doom and gloom stuff, but there's also like a ton of food descriptions of like feasts, and I've just like always liked in my art, like I like portraying like eating and drinking scenes, just like consuming food, because yeah, I think about like people as consumers a lot in the work that I do. So that just kind of fit with my aesthetic. So then I like to, like, even before this project, I drew like a lot of people eating burgers and pizza and stuff, and then just kind of fit into this one too.
Yeah and that's kind of part of your ancient text, putting it into like this modern art, definitely translated into that. And I am going to ask the next question. Some of these images have very specific palette choices of monochromes, and some of them are really flat and plain, and others are really whimsical and colorful and wild. Did these atmospheres represent anything or come from somewhere specifically?
Yeah, they're not like, it was more of an effort to keep it fresh and interesting to me, like to grow as a painter during the production of it. So it kind of, that would be one sort of constraint I would choose, would be like to do something more monochrome or to like mix it up. Like the whole book of Isaiah, when I painted it, I wanted it to be like pretty much all black with like a light focus where like the light would kind of emanate from in the paintings. Like it started with a painting from Psalms that was like in the words for it was about night watches. So that got me thinking about like indigo watches, which I was obsessed with as a kid, when you like can turn your light on and it glows in the dark. So like that was the light source for one of the paintings, is this guy with his night watch on.
Wow.
And just kind of it illuminates him, and then it gets darker away from the source of the light. So that's what got me thinking about just like a really, really dark paintings. And then that's for the book of Isaiah, like I said. But I was just kind of, and then after that, like it really got me thinking about contrast and stuff. So like the illustrations before Isaiah were less, they were just more vivid and kind of all over the place. But then like after it, it got me like really thinking about contrast. So I was kind of trying to push the focus of the paintings around more, if that makes sense. Because of what I learned from that book.
Cool.
So kind of more eye-catching, or I don't know.
Yeah, well, they are. Yeah, definitely they are. Okay, so tell me, obviously people have been perceiving this, and you've had stuff in galleries that versus people just viewing this in the physical book. Have you had any interesting interactions with people that are viewing your work, or like commentary that you've gotten from people that are viewing it and maybe didn't know what to expect or thought they knew what to expect?
Definitely. I feel like generally been really positive at shows, because like people are coming to see this, you know, so they're like kind of expecting to enjoy it or something like that. But there's like a big chunk of people that are totally indifferent to it, which is to be expected. But people have seemed really enthused about it. And I really like watching people at the shows. Like, I like when they like look in at the painting, like really focused on it, and then they start laughing because they're like, something clicks. Like, I really love that. I love witnessing that. Because like I said, it's like, humor is the thread that runs through my whole work. So I love when it clicks, but I like arrange the paintings in a procession for all of the shows, so that like people can walk through and just see them linearly as they appear in the book, and like the order that I painted them. But then at the end, I leave a notebook for people to either sign up for my mailing list or like leave some comments. And there's been some like negative comments in there too, which I do like to hear, you know?
Yeah.
One of them was, if you keep practicing, maybe you'll get better. And it was just really nice to hear that. And then one other one was, your paintings are only worth the Bible verse that inspired them.
Ooh, like, wow, that's a good one.
Yeah.
So, wow.
But I'll take any of it. Just want to know what people are thinking, right? So I'd rather they say that than don't.
I was gonna say, the Bible has a pretty large reputation, so maybe your paintings are
yeah
that's pretty good. Wow. So I know that 1111 Press published this giant wonderful book. How did you get involved with them?
My friend Grant Meyerhofer published a book with them, and I illustrated the cover for it.
Okay.
But this was before I knew the press or anything. But then I went to the Twin Cities Book Festival a few years back, with the idea to be looking for publishers.
Cool.
Because I've had no luck finding publishers. Like, I would go to bookstores and look at all the big art books and write down all the potential publishers that like could handle a project of this size, or and I like submitted to like dozens and dozens of publishers to like crickets, radio silence, nothing. But I met Andrew there, Andrew Wilt, who's one of the founders of the press. And I was like, whoa, I know 1111 Press. My friend wrote a book with you guys. And he's like, whoa, you're Sam. You did the cover for Grant's book. And cool. And then we just stayed in touch, and it worked out. And Andrew is interested in the Bible, because he was raised with a pretty strict religious upbringing that he struggled with, but it also like left him open to this kind of thing. So where other publishers like wouldn't dare touch something so polarizing and confusing, and like honestly confusing as my interpretation of this text, he found it within him to be interested enough in this to pursue it. And it was like probably the most work they've had to do for one of their books yet. It was just like a lot of back and forth for a long time. So
grateful. that's a great story of connections. So lastly, I know you mentioned that you started a podcast about your process of selling these books, and I don't know if that's related to, I wanted to comment that I've seen on social media that you were doing a door-to-door experiment in sales as well. Do you want to share about this podcast you were talking about?
Yeah. I made a pilot teaser episode to take on my book tour with me to kind of show about this concept, where I have a hidden mic and I knock on people's doors and try to sell them the book like an old time Bible salesman. But then it's like this, a very strange version of it. But nobody's even, up until now, no one has even let me open my briefcase to show them the book yet. I only tried one day to like do this. But for the podcast, the premise, that door-to-door salesman premise, is like really interesting, but it's also like, it seems limited now the more I think about it. So there will be some of it, the door-to-door stuff, but that won't be the primary focus anymore. I'm working on the script for it. It's turned into like a completely scripted thing with like some hidden mic stuff. And it's going to be called Birth of a Salesman, and it's coming out June 2023. And it begins with me at my wit's end for how to get this book into the world. It's like, it's semi-autobiographical for sure. Okay. But because like after the initial sales trickle down to practically nothing, I start going door to door dressed like a Bible salesman from the 70s, and then it just evolves from there. And it's there's like good guys and bad guys and plot twists, and then the helpful, I meet a lot of people on the journey, and they kind of drive the plot, suggesting that I diversify my sales approach in marketing this book. And it's like riffing off of the play Death of a Salesman a little bit, because I like came up with a name before I even read the book, and I just read the screenplay. But then I just read it, and it was a crazy play. It was so good. But this one's gonna be like way more, my Birth of a Salesman is gonna be like way more optimistic. And it's gonna be a comedy where my character is like almost too naive or aloof or something to actually get bummed out for long when things do go wrong.
That's great. Yeah.
And he just like really starts to buy into the American dream and thinks that he can save America with the Bible he illustrated, but he's got no concept of its cultural or historical relevance, you know. So, but his goal in the podcast is to sell 100,000 copies of the book, one of which to the Pope, and then to sell the original 257 paintings to the Vatican for $1 million for like $1 million. It's also like, it's gonna be an opportunity to do some like guerrilla advertising campaign. It's like, someone, for example, someone in the story tells me that I should have a website, so I can pay for an advertisement at the DMV and like direct people to my website, because everybody has got to go to the DMV at some point in their life.
I was just there. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So like you could see the advertisement on the screen there. So you can imagine it.
That's wonderful.
But then, yeah, there's other things, like I'm going to get yard signs made and pamphlet at churches. And then I'm going to get a billboard too that says there's a new Bible salesman in town.
Wow.
I'm just going to try to have like fun with it.
Yeah.
Make like the commercialization of this book the actual art project that I'm doing. Be like a performance art piece within the podcast, and I get to collaborate with friends and actors and writers, and just kind of, I'm just really excited about it.
That's so exciting. I love that. It's super cool. I'm excited to start seeing that pop up. And speaking of which, I'm going to bring us to a close here in just a couple seconds. But so people, if they want to learn more about this and get updates, and also if they wanted to have access to a copy of your book, of course, would you please share your website that you have online, that you have now, the one for the book?
Yeah.
Yeah,
you can order a copy online. My new website is americasbible.com. That's like no apostrophe S, it's just Americas with no apostrophe, mm-hmm. bible.com.
Right.
And it's live now. I just made it live today.
Congrats.
Thanks. Yeah, I can't believe the domain was available, but
valid.
Yeah.
Okay.
But also there's a lot of information and links to order the book on my main website, mrrobertson.com, and Mr. is spelled out M-I-S-T-E-R, or go to my publisher's website, 1111press.com/Old Testament. Yeah.
Perfect.
And yay. I got some events coming up and stuff too. Do you want to?
Yeah. If you have a couple events coming up, we can share those quick and then.
On January 27th, I know that's over 2 months from now, but from 4 to 7, I'll be doing a presentation at Open Book, with an old art history professor of mine from the University of Minnesota. Mm-hmm. His name is JB Shank. He's coincidentally working on his opus, and it's like a huge study of illuminated manuscripts. So like when I reached out to him, and he was just like, I think in his email, he said, I'm a very superstitious person, and that you like reached out to me now, like, is crazy. But I'm like super excited to see what he comes up with. But we're solidifying the lineup of speakers. And the event will use my book as a contemporary example that his insights will reference and kind of orbit around. And there'll be history and art history professors and theologians and people like far more qualified than myself about religion. To speak about this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it'll put my book in like an academic setting, which would be crazy.
Phenomenal. Yes, there's so much organization going on. That's cool. So yeah, americasbible.com, mrrobertson.com, and then January 27th, you said?
Yep.
At Open Book, which is on this Washington Avenue, correct?
Yes, I do believe so.
Okay, great. That's really exciting. So well, I wanted to thank you because we're at time. Thank you so much for talking with me today. I'm so glad we finally got to, and I'm very lucky I got to see your exhibit at Hell Above over in Seward. That's where I saw your works initially for the first time. And so I'm glad
thank
that we could
so
come
much.
Full circle and connect. And so yeah, thank you. It's great. It's the community. And that's your collaboration with all these actors and other writers and academics, sounds like it's great. So I wanted to say thank you for listening to Write on Radio with Samuel Robertson and myself. I'm Molly Ray, and next this.
You are listening to Write on Radio on KFAI 90.3 FM and streaming live on the web at kfai.org. I'm Annie. I'd like to thank our special guest tonight, Paul Metza and Samuel Robertson. Can you leave Rivendell on? And all our listeners, without your support, without your support and donations, KFAI would not be possible. You can find more news and info about Right on Radio at kfai.org/rightonradio. You can listen on all your favorite podcast platforms too. That's Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast.